Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Hi, I'm Robert Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this, I like that. This is our favorite thing.
Favorite things.
How are you, Kevin?
I'm delicious.
What?
I saw pizza on your thing right there, and I just thought delicious sounded like a good word to me.
I like that. I have to tell everybody, Kevin, I'm so proud of Kevin. I only communicate in Bitmojis.
Yeah, I actually had to download the Bitmoji app and learn to do it so that I could communicate with Rob more effectively. And now all we do is send Bitmojis to each other.
And I was really proud of myself because I thought my Bitmoji like totally like looked like me. I'm like, this is the best Bitmoji ever. Then I saw Kevin's. Kevin's is scary. No. Accurate.
It's just because it has a green flannel shirt, which I actually own.
But the face and the hairstyle are exactly the
same. Fat nose.
No, what? You have such a low opinion of yourself. My God. I know people who think you're gorgeous and have such a crush on you.
They're drunk.
They're good. Well, listen, I didn't mention that part of it. Let them be happy, okay?
Okay.
Let them be happy.
No, I actually enjoy the... I was reluctant to do it, and now actually I really enjoy the Bitmoji.
You sent me one, which I'm obsessed with. Maybe we'll post this one. It's you doing the Saturday Night Fever pose behind a disco ball. It's kind of impressive, and it's kind of great. Have you seen any theater lately?
No. No, I haven't. Post-Tony Awards, because I went on such a mad rush to see as much as I could of last season, mm-hmm. that I haven't even begun to get into this season. Yeah. So I want to see 1984. I want to see Marvin's Room.
Yeah.
I want to get going. But no, I must confess that I have watched stuff on television. And thanks to you, I have to bring up... it's funny how I will listen to our podcast, our favorite things, and I think, oh, I want to watch Mad Woman of Central Park West. So I put it on. I woke up early morning at 5 o'clock and I couldn't sleep. And so I put it on, fell right back asleep. But no, it's fascinating. You guys, it's on YouTube. I mean, go back and listen to Rob's episode of the Mad Woman of Central Park West starring Phyllis Newman.
Maybe it's my name. Maybe it's my face.
There's some weird...
Maybe
John,
it's
John
my
Can't, Fred Cantor Neb wrote that cheerleader song.
Give me
what
an H,
is going
give me an R,
on?
Give
I
me
love
a B, the, give me an L, give me an O, give me a C,
it.
Give me a K. H and R block.
I also enjoy the mobile...
commercials?
Yes.
I like
so
James
weird.
Earl Jones narrating
a
it.
A very skinny James Earl Jones.
Very, very yeah. sexy James Earl Jones.
Yeah, no, it's...
Phyllis
it's
Newman. will be singing from the Mad Woman
right?
of Central Park West.
It's very serious.
I will be taking a nap.
Well, and did. It's fun. It's interesting.
But she puts over a number so brilliantly.
She really does. The cameras go so close to her face. I mean, like they zoom in and you're
tight.
Getting... It's good. It's fun. It's a great way to see what theater was like for a woman in the late 70s, you know?
Yeah, and you know, we...
Or man, it doesn't matter.
We mentioned this before we went on the air, and I think we had talked about... I don't know if I had mentioned this in the last episode when we actually talked about the Mad Woman of Central Park West, which is one of the things that the critics singled out, and you mentioned, was she does a medley of songs.
Okay, totally. And it's... I enjoy the feminist vibe of it, you know, where she's like, look at all these songs that these men wrote for women. You know, I enjoy being a girl or, you know, they must have had 15. And I would have loved to have known the music arranger. I don't know if it was John Clifton who was the music supervisor of that. I would love to know the backstory of that because the show, as you talked about it on the podcast, and we don't need to recapitulate, but it's all different composers, all different songwriters. Yeah. It's not just one person wrote all of the songs. But I'm curious what the process was of putting that sequence together because it's really well done.
Absolutely. I think it's so well
and
done.
Funny.
and really funny. And she does it well. That's the main reason if you hadn't listened to this, the Mad Woman of Central Park episode, the reason that I recommended it was, like I said, it's to me, I don't think the book is the strongest. But I think the way she puts over a number is absolutely brilliant. And she is able to physicalize every single note, every single measure, every single chord. Because we were talking that there are a lot of performers who, when the music is playing and there's no lyrics, they sort of check out.
Right.
She uses every single beat possible.
She does.
It's pretty incredible. But you watched it. Thanks for watching.
I did, yeah.
And I watched Welcome to Whoop Whoop.
You did not.
I did.
Did you really?
Yeah. I was able to find a copy of it.
How
I thought
in
it
the
was
world
fantastic.
Did you find it?
Don't ask.
It's so weird, isn't it?
But really funny.
Wacky.
I really liked it.
Really wacky.
Yeah, I liked
I love
it a
that,
lot.
Rob, that's
yeah,
cool.
Thanks. So, okay, so you haven't seen anything, but you watched Mad Woman of Central Park West.
And I watched also on every once in a while I'll go on Turner Classic Movies because I guess that's where I am in life. And and also was an American in Paris, which I did not see on Broadway, unfortunately.
Oh.
But man, that movie is so good.
It's gorgeous.
I obviously, it's like hello everybody. Of course it is. But
oh, but it's so beautiful.
Dear God, Gene Kelly, my goodness.
I love Gene Kelly. Have you seen somebody? This is so horrible. It's a Tumblr called Gene Kelly's Butt, and it's just close ups of his rear end.
No, Rob, I've missed that one.
Well, you're obviously not a musical theater connoisseur like I am. There's Gene Kelly's butt, and over here is Fred Astaire's balls.
Good old Fred.
They look so sophisticated. They come with top hat and tail.
Have you seen anything?
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes, I have. Yeah, I saw recently, I got to see an off-Broadway musical called Attack of the Elvis Impersonators.
I don't believe you.
I swear to you, Attack of the Elvis Impersonators, which was a lot of fun.
Did you get attacked?
I was attacked by an Elvis impersonator.
Wow.
And actually, I hope this is a true statement. One of my friends, his father, is the only impersonator approved by Elvis Presley himself.
No way.
Yes.
Of course.
His name is Raymond Michael, and he is the only Elvis impersonator who has been approved or was approved by Elvis himself.
Wow.
Elvis liked him so much that he gave him a whole bunch of jumpsuits and was like,
No.
I can't do an Elvis impression, but I'm going to try. Hold on.
Enjoy the jumpsuits, kid.
No, that didn't work.
I do the Christmas song a lot.
Let me hear it. He always sounds like he's going to burp. He's got
it. Yeah.
He's got it. Just choking on a rib, guys. He's fine. He's okay. He's A-okay.
Some of his musicals are pretty funny, though.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So
and we have a
funny
Hawaiian album of his that...
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
And the songs are so weird, and I love them.
This was a really funny show.
Hawaii, USA. Hawaii, aloha. It's so weird.
I wish you would sing more. But this was a really funny premise. The premise was there was an international rock star who is like all into sex and drugs and violence.
Wait, this is a movie that Elvis was in?
No. This is Attack of the Elvis Impersonators.
Oh.
No, because if this was an Elvis movie, I'd be like, and Anne Margaret says.
Exactly. They're on the beach.
They're on the beach, and okay. Anne Margaret shows up.
My apologies. Oh.
No, it's okay. I apologize to Anne Margaret. And he decides that he wants to clean up the world.
Oh.
And he becomes Elvis.
That's nice.
He feels like he's possessed by the spirit of Elvis, and everyone sort of guts onto this old nostalgic Elvis craze.
Wow.
So it's Attack of the Elvis Impersonators. And you know what I got to see again? And I was very honored. One of these things that's so cool about doing this podcast is not only do you get to meet your heroes, sometimes you become friends with your heroes, which like this morning I got to go to Charles Strauss's apartment and talk to Charles Strauss while he was showing me like songs. He was like, this is the original Hymn for a Sunday Evening from Bye Bye Birdie. And there I am holding the original.
That's stupid, Rob.
And I'm just
and
like,
why didn't you call me and let me come with you?
Because it's my time with Charles.
My turn. It's my turn. No, that really is special. And that is like, it's legendary.
Yeah,
it really
you just
is.
Sit there and you're like, oh my God, this is my
and
life.
The man is still pumping it out.
Oh,
you gotta wake up in the morning and have something to do.
He was sitting at the computer writing a script for a new show.
See?
And you're like, great, awesome. You're literally 89 years old and that's what you're doing. I wake up in the morning and I'm like, which episode of Golden Girls is on? and I just call it a day. I just give up. I give up as soon as I wake up. That's how you got to live life, kids. You got to give up. What's that? You got to give up to get. Nope, you got to just.
Blanche's dad is coming over again. That one.
Oh, yep. Big Dad. You know which episode makes me cry like a baby?
I don't watch the ones that make you cry, like the one on the boardwalk with the old man that Sophia's friends with. I hate that one. I hate that episode.
Oh, okay. So that one makes me cry. The one that also, I got a couple that make me cry. I've got that one. I've got the episode where Sophia's son, Phil, dies, and she didn't want to acknowledge the fact that he was a cross-dresser, and at the end she cries. There's the one where Blanche, her dad dies, and she goes, and she's like, I'm nobody's little girl anymore, and that's a big one.
When Sophia goes to heaven,
Sophia
remember that
goes
one?
To heaven.
Stan, or not Stan, she sees...
the actor's name was Sid Melton. What was the name of the father?
Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed.
This is horrible. I can think of the actor's name.
I feel like we have to cut this out so we don't embarrass ourselves. Sal. Of course.
The actor's name is Sid Melton and Sal. And then the last one is, this one always gets me. I don't know why. It's when Blanche finds out that her husband isn't dead, that he faked his own death, and he comes back and he's like, I'm sorry I had to fake my own death. And she's like, I don't know if, she tells the girl, she goes, I don't know if I can trust him anymore. Mm-hmm. She's like, and I've always dreamed that he might come back to me. I always had this dream where he comes running into my arms and I give him a big hug and then I wake up and I'm holding my pillow.
Aww.
And they're like, oh, and at the end of the episode, she's like, yes, I'm going to be with you. And they run to an embrace and she wakes up and she's holding her pillow.
And
played by the great George Grizzard, the great stage actor, George Grizzard. Those are my favorites.
I like that, Rob.
Yeah. She's called this the Golden Girls. Golden Girls episodes that make me cry. That's our it's related to theater. George Grizzard was a Tony-winning actor.
Sure.
He's an actor, right? Doesn't that count?
Yeah, they do songs on their shows.
They do songs.
Miami. Yep.
Miami. You've got style.
There it is.
Blue sky, sunshine, white sand by the mile. I wonder who wrote that song.
You know what I love so much is that when I was visiting my parents a couple weeks ago, my mom looked at me and she was like, I wonder who wrote that Miami song for the Golden Girls. I actually looked it up. They were just TV songwriters.
Oh, really?
But they're TV songwriters. It's not like Barry Manilow or something like that. There's like three of them and they wrote it. You can find the Wikipedia page. I actually looked it up for my mother.
They originally hired Sondheim, but the atonal version.
Miami, like that.
Dorothy just couldn't hit those notes. That's my favorite. Did you ever see that Jerry Herman at the Hollywood Bowl?
And Rob, that's one of my, that's a future favorite thing.
It's a future favorite
because
thing.
Because the conductor is.
Don Pippin.
Yes.
Lorna Luft
is in that. Karen Morrow was in that. Leroy Reams is in that. All of our guests that we've ever had is in that Hollywood Bowl.
Come on in. Come join the party.
I love that Hollywood Bowl.
But do you remember the part where Bea Arthur comes out and she's like, I'm going to sing from MAME. Originally, it was called Vera after my title character, but Jerry couldn't make it rhyme. Sondheim could make it rhyme. And I was like, yes. She went there.
She did.
Oh my gosh. What was I saying? I'm all confused. You know what I was really proud of though, really quickly? That you texted me when your mom couldn't figure out who played somebody in a TV show. And I was able to get it with under 3 seconds. I was
you
so proud of myself.
Me on that. I don't remember what it was.
I forget who she was thinking of, but it was William. The answer was William Catt.
She was
and the
wrong,
greatest American
she was
hero.
Like, oh, this person was in this. And then, and I said, no, it's some 80s show. And then you were like, oh, it's William Catt. And you knew immediately.
Because the greatest American hero has one of the greatest theme songs.
How does it go, Rob?
Believe it or not, I'm walking on air. I never believed that I could. Flying away on a wing and a prayer. Who could it be? Believe it or not, it's just me.
It's
best used in the Seinfeld episode where George records it as his outgoing message. Believe it or not, George isn't at home, so please leave a message at the beep. Where could I be?
Oh gosh, the
believe it or not, George's not home. And it's Jason Alexander just sitting on the sofa. He doesn't like to pick up the phone because he's so proud of his outgoing message.
Right.
He likes to just hear
just
it.
Just like
and
let
dance.
It be bop.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that's my favorite thing.
I love that you have both memorized.
Hold
Rob.
On. Now I'm going all the way back to my main point. You asked me what I saw, and I was talking about.
We actually do connect things together.
Heroes becoming our friends, and Jim Brochu. Jim Brochu, ladies and gentlemen. If you're in the New York area, I want to encourage you to see this. Jim Brochu was maybe our seventh or eighth guest.
Goodness, you have to look really at about a year, about 70 episodes ago.
Jim is a very famous character actor in New York City, and he was mentored by, listen to these mentors. Are you ready? Zero Mostel, Davey Burns, Jack Guilford. I mean, the best of the best. This
truly
is incredible here. Oh, and Lucille Ball.
Oh, that's all.
He spent every day of Lucille Ball's last years with her, getting comedy lessons. How cool was that? Anyway, Jim wrote a really interesting one-man show called Zero Hour, which is a one-man show about Zero Mostel, which has been around now since 2006. It's won tons of awards. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he's reviving it off-Broadway, and I was so honored. Jim said, would you come do a talkback with me after the show? I mean, other people doing talkbacks. Hal Prince is doing a talkback in a couple of weeks.
Sheldon
Harnick. I hosted a talkback and spoke to Jim about his career in Zero Mostel. But I was very honored.
Rob.
I felt really.
You had to do
welcome.
Some research. I mean, you had to really know your Zero Mostel.
I had to know my Jim Brochu.
Well,
it was actually funny because I said, Jim, I said, why me out of all the people that could do it? And he goes, you know more about me than anybody else. And I was like, I do indeed. Thank you, Jim Brochu. I love that, man. So it's one of those moments. That's what it goes back to.
Well, good. You should check that. Check out his show. See him do it. I want to go see. I have not seen him.
Theater at St. Clement's.
Yeah.
And there's clips of it on YouTube if you want to see him. He looks nothing like Zero Mostel in real life, but he gets on that stage. He looks just like
he pulls hair forward and gets going. And yeah.
And the attitude, the energy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. He's really fantastic.
Zero was quite a character, wasn't he?
Quite a character. And what I really appreciate about this play is a lot of it focuses on the Blacklist. And Zero Mostel being blacklisted as a communist.
Right.
And I find that that's something that I think is fading from our minds.
Lest we forget, that is right.
Because
you know what? We're really close to, I don't know. Cut that.
No.
It could. I mean, you never know. When history repeats itself.
Nixon
part two going on right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, listen, we were talking about this, which is the blacklisting can possibly go. This is what I was going to say. An audience member came up to me afterwards and said to me, do you think that there's a new type of blacklist now, but it's media-based? So it's not the government the government coming forward saying, you're doing something offensive, you should be penalized. It's us as a collective group. And what he was using as an example on both sides of the political coin, you can have somebody like Ted Nugent, who's very conservative, or you could have somebody like Kathy Griffin, who's very liberal.
And she definitely got
both of them, I know, continuously lose support and lose jobs and stuff. So have we created our own blacklist with people that we don't agree with politically?
Right.
And like we had mentioned earlier on a previous podcast, you know, we record these things at various times. So sometimes we can't respond and react to things that are going
on
in
real time.
And so one of the things that we haven't talked about yet that we should probably address at some point is Julius Caesar at the Public
Theater.
In
the park.
You know, Shakespeare in the Park, which is for our listeners who are unaware, if you're listening to this years from now, maybe this will have faded from your memory, but they're doing Julius Caesar right now, Shakespeare in the Park, free Shakespeare, funded by...
Free
Shakespeare in the Park.
Free Shakespeare.
They're doing Julius Caesar, which has been around for years.
Shakespeare, 400 years.
Years. I feel I know where your sentiment lies on this. And
stating facts right now.
They are portraying Julius Caesar as he looks like Donald Trump.
It's not veiled. I mean, it's so
not veiled.
Obvious.
I mean,
his wife is Slavic. I mean, it's.
And as you know, in Julius Caesar, I hope this isn't a spoiler alert, he's assassinated.
Hey, too Brute. Yeah. Yes.
And the community is in not our theater community, but apparently most of America or a majority of Americans or some Americans, we don't
know. Not majority.
Know. It depends. It depends on what news source you're watching, though.
Never was the majority.
Is up in arms saying that this is a play that's saying that we should assassinate Donald Trump, and therefore, if I understand this correctly, Bank of America and Delta were sponsoring. Bank of America said, we are continuing to sponsor the Public, but we are not sponsoring this particular production. And I believe Delta pulled out entirely and said, we're not...
They funded the one that was in the Midwest that had Obama as this exact same role. I'm not saying this that, is, okay. You know, I'm just saying.
No,
like,
no, no. But
it's like,
but,
come
but,
on, you guys.
Listen, you can go back further than that. Anytime this play is produced, they usually make, or some people in productions make Julius Caesar look like whoever the current leader is.
Right.
I saw
to, like,
a production in the 2000s where the person spoke with a Texas drawl and looked like George W. Bush.
Totally.
It is, it's just, that's just into it. However, now people are not only protesting this production of Shakespeare in the Park, including a group of people that ran onto the stage a couple of nights ago
who
during the
allegedly
assessment.
May have been paid to do that.
Oh, really?
That's what I read.
I'm
today.
In the wrong business then.
That's what I read.
But in places all over the country, they're saying that productions of Julius Caesar are being protested, even when they're taking place in the time period in which they were written. Mm-hmm. So people are walking around wearing togas and stuff, and they're still protesting it. Or other plays by this new playwright, William Shakespeare.
Boy, who, sounds familiar.
He's a new playwright, according
wow.
to a lot of people.
Good for him.
So what do you think of this? Do you think, I'm going to ask you two questions. Here's the first question. Do you think it's appropriate that the play has a character that looks like the current president of the United States in it? Is that appropriate or not appropriate?
It is most certainly appropriate. It is most certainly acceptable. It is art. It does not matter. Kathy Griffin holding a head up of a severed president head, that's not okay to me. That seems a bit in poor taste. Freedom of speech, sure. But when it's a play, when it's for the art, they've not changed. It's still Shakespeare's language. It's a concept. And they're not condoning their. And if anyone has read the play, you know what it really is about. I mean, the fact that they draw parallels to that is absurd to me. But it's a dialogue. So that's what art is for. We're meant to. You know, there are sometimes you go to the theater and we just want to sit and forget our problems. There's sometimes you go to the theater and it stirs up a debate. Yeah, like let's talk about it.
Are
then.
We afraid of debates in our country?
I don't think we're afraid of it because it certainly seems to be happening all the time.
Let me take a step back. Are we afraid of using art as a catalyst for debate?
I think that, in my opinion, that art, especially in New York, is such a money-making venture. So... usually we don't get to have that luxury, but in the ideal world, and fortunately the public is in a place where they financially can afford it. If Bank of America pulls their support from their production of XYZ, I think, I don't know their numbers, but I think public's doing okay financially. So they're one of the few theater institutions, I think, in America that can do that and get away with it and still be standing up for the integrity of the art form. So I'm a fan of that. But I think most often or not, it's a commercial theater, so they can't risk that. You can't risk not making money on, you know, middle America coming to New York City to come see your show. No one's going to see Julius Caesar from, no, that's not true. But most people seeing Julius Caesar, I would guess, are of the New York area.
Great.
If that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. That makes sense. And then do you think it's right that Bank of America and Delta pulled funding? Well, we have Bank of America pulling funding for right. a particular show.
Right.
And then we have Delta pulling funding for the entire theater company itself. And apparently their sentiments seemed that if they had known this is what the production was going to look like, they would have pulled it out much sooner. But apparently...
Bullshit. It's all political to me. I feel like there's so much that we don't know about when it comes to these sort of dealings. I get why they have to do that. I wish they didn't, but in our society, in our capitalist society, that's the price we pay. They can't lose their business because half their business comes from a certain demographic. What do you think?
My feeling is that if that's my feeling is if you're that can ask questions. This is my feeling. I feel that it's their money. They can pull it if they want to, and then I can turn around and not use Delta.
Exactly.
Or go to a different bank than Bank
right.
of America.
Right.
We all have our rights, but you can't take away the right of freedom of speech.
Exactly.
And if you know the play, what the play is clearly saying is violence solves nothing. Violence creates more problems than the problems you had previously. And so it's not saying to kill the leader.
And solve all your problems.
It doesn't solve all your problems. It actually creates more than before.
Indeed.
Finding peaceful ways of getting through the problem.
Right.
Of working on the problem. I am offended that so many people are protesting other productions of Shakespeare.
It's like,
because what I'm offended by, it makes me go, what have you learned in school? This is not a contemporary playwright. This is a person who has been dead for 400 years. Why are you protesting? Productions, I swear to you, Kevin, productions of Midsummer Night's Dream, they're being protested because it says the name William Shakespeare on it.
Well, that's a little scary, Rob. That's speaking of, you know, the Red Scare.
So I am terrified. So my feeling is, it is this country is based on free speech. The public can do whatever they so want, as can Kathy Griffin, as can Ted Nugent, as can whomever, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. And the corporations that are sponsoring have every single right to say, yes, I'm going to support that, and no, I'm not going to support that, and I have every right to support them or not support them.
Preach.
That is that we are based on a model of free speech. But the fact that people are running around protesting productions of Midsummer Night's Dreams in towns because they know that's the same name as the person who did this.
Don't have the full information. Like, don't.
However, in another information, a little bit of news for you, I found out that 7% of Americans believe that chocolate milk comes from brown cows.
And I'm going to drop my microphone.
And I kind of have a feeling after they protest, they all go to Denny's and have a chocolate milk.
Thank you, sir, for that one.
So that's that. But like I said, we feel it's important to talk about these things.
We have to.
Because
we have to talk about them.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Because my favorite thing today sort of deals with the importance of theater and the importance of art, not just in our country, but as part of our humanity.
Good transition.
Thank you. I work hard on those transitions. I really, really do.
Okay. So what kind of item do you have today?
My item today is a book. It's a book that I first purchased when I was started my first year of graduate school. It came out the first year that I was in graduate school. Aww. And it's sort of a book that I've based my artistic philosophy around. And we've never...
The artist's way.
Not...
Sorry.
I'm not
sorry.
You're free. With written by... Who did I say?
It's been like 6 months Villages, since I've talked about it.
Who wrote
it,
right? Is that how I said Hervé Villechaize? Tattoo wrote the foreword from that, right?
Yes. The plane... Okay, stop. Okay.
He saw me. He saw me.
God, I did. I was like, I'm going to do it first.
I'm going to,
What? I'm so curious.
Yes, Bob. The play is called The Artist's Way. It's a wonderful book about the art this way. The art of swaying back and forth, back and forth, Bob. I learned that on the set of Fantasy Island.
I can't wait till we have him as our guest.
With the great Dabney Coleman and Lorna Loft.
Lorna Loft.
Now, the book is it's a book, and this book is it had a really important influence on me just as I was beginning my artistic journey.
Yeah.
And I think it's a wonderful. I read it once a year. I always come back to it.
Jeez.
Yeah. The book is called The Alchemy of Theater, The Divine Science, Essays in Theater and the Art of Collaboration.
Oh my goodness, Rob, I've never even heard of this.
I know it sounds so...
It sounds textbook.
It's not. It's a coffee table book. I'm pointing to it right there.
That's it right there. I see it.
It's a coffee table book. Once again, it's edited by... Oh God, I hope I pronounce his name correctly because I really love his work. Edited by Robert from Playbill.
Simonson?
Viegas?
Oh, Viegas.
I'm Robert. I'm so sorry. I'm mispronouncing your last
Robert.
Name. I apologize. I'm so sorry. But this book is absolutely brilliant. What happens is he interviewed about 20 or so artists that are working in the theater on the art of collaboration. It really is about the art of collaboration, which is what we as theater artists do, which is we all get into a room together and we pitch ideas back and forth, and whoever idea is the best. That it's all about serving the story. It's about enlightening the audience or educating the audience or entertaining the audience. And whichever idea does that more effectively, that's the one that we're going to use. There are many businesses that are quote unquote in the real world that I feel are very territorial. Having been in academia for a very long time, I can tell you how territorial things can get. And what we do is it's the best idea wins. And so this book is divided into four sections. It's a very easy read because everyone's interview is maybe like 2 or 3 pages long. One is called Pen to Paper. It's about the writers. One is called Captains. It's about the directors and choreographers and the producers. One is called Their Hour Upon the Stage, and it interviews actors. And the last one is called Completion, where he talks to set designers and costume designers and press people. And they all define what their job is and how they collaborate with other departments to make the job work.
What a great book.
And, you know, it came out in 2006, but unfortunately some of the people that were interviewed, we've lost since then, but it's so nice to read their recollections, like Wendy Wasserstein, Edward Albee, Cy Coleman, Dick Latessa, and then people that like Cheetah Rivera are interviewed, and Aronson Flaherty are interviewed, Terrence McNally, Jay Binder. It's really a fantastic, fantastic examination of what we do as theater artists. And so, like I said, I think it's a really great book. It's called The Alchemy of Theater, The Divine Science, Essays in Theater and the Art of Collaboration, edited by Robert Viegas, V-I-A-G-A-S. And like I said, he's one of the big guys over at Playbill, so you see his name all the time. It's really a fantastic book. And like I said, I come back to it once every year because it reminds us how important it is to keep ourselves open to other ideas and to keep ourselves consistently listening for what is going to best serve this story.
It's so true. And I think that is one of the most special things about our art form is the collaboration aspect, whether it be when we work together, when we get to do a show and I'm music director, you're director, and we collaborate. Personal anecdote, I remember I did a concert in Cleveland and with Bill Rudman, who has the On the Isle, he has a radio show that comes out every week, and Ted Chapin was the host, and it was about Richard Rodgers songs after Hammerstein died, but Rodgers was celebrating him and Hammerstein's relationship, and it was a black and white clip, he talked about why they work so well together, and he said, well, we have this, and there's a German phrase, I don't know it, someone's going to know it that's listening right now, but there's a German phrase for that basically means, no, you go first, you first. So whoever has an idea, if you think you've got a good idea, but your friend has an idea as well, you say, no, I want to hear your idea first, and then it's my idea. And that's part of collaboration. And a Little Night Music, when we had our first meet and greet for the revival, Sondheim was there, and we went around the room, and it's like, hi, I'm Kevin, I'm Mr. Erlinson, hi, I'm so-and-so. Hi, I'm Steve, I wrote the music and lyrics. But before he could say anything else, he was like, but most importantly, Hugh Wheeler, who's not with us, because without him, I would never have been able to do this. And so, in that moment, I thought, oh my goodness, this is a man that Hugh Wheeler's gone. You could take all the credit in the world, but you without getting through halfway through one sentence, you said, no, I can't. I'm nothing without my collaborator. And so, I think it's really cool that you have a book that celebrates that, and that you know it's proof that that is the most important thing in our business.
It's really a fantastic book, and so I hope everybody picks up a copy, because like I said, it's just a reminder of how wonderful it is when two people, three people, four people get into a room and go, what's the best idea for this? Because at the end of the day, it's really about the audience.
Yeah. And I love seeing different writers that their voices change. changed based on their collaboration. Yeah. You know, I firmly believe that Sondheim was the reason why Julie Stein was able to make Gypsy, for instance. Mm. You know,
absolutely.
You know, I just think that that's really special.
And so many professions are solitary. So many
dictatorships,
professions.
Really.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, you know, you're on.
I wonder
your
how
own.
The presidency's going. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Good for him.
You know,
let him be happy. Oh God.
I wonder how much he collaborates. Yeah. Exactly. You know,
Exactly. Politics is also, is that a collaborative art form?
I think the ones that do really well oftentimes are collaborators in a positive sense of the word.
Story.
Do you know what I mean, though?
True story.
You know way more about politics than I do, but I would venture to guess that when you have positive collaborations that you tend to get more done than being just like the dictator.
Look at, I won't go into politics. Yes, but you're absolutely
you
correct.
You want to, though.
I want to so bad, but I'm not going to because I always thought this podcast.
I always like when you do, though. I do enjoy
it. I got to stop. I got to back away. I got to back away from it.
Good.
Get out of the way, Clary. That's a line from my sequel of Steel Magnolias that I'm working on. Now, what the German word that you had mentioned before, this is I'll come up with it,
but.
Which is what we would know as being polite.
Right.
Is in German is called being polite. So
thank
I think
you.
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. I took German for a few years.
That's good. Translation's good.
Thanks. I'm working on Mother Courage and her children, which I'm calling Mother Courage and her children.
I feel like I'm in cabaret right now.
I'm never a dialect coach. Although I'd love to play Herr Schultz at some point. But only if they let me sing Mick Skite. If they cut that number, I'm not doing it.
Me Skite.
They're like, well, we wrote it for Jack Gilford and nobody does it as good as Jack Gilford. I'm like, great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Give me a chance. Come on.
I have a YouTube clip. So I have no way of transitioning from your amazing book, which I want to get that because I've never heard of that book. It's my favorite. No, Jack Cassidy's my favorite. One of my favorite male singers of an era of the 60s, 70s, 80s.
John Cullum?
No, but good, but nice. If you look up Mariah and Richard
Kiley,
K-I-L-E-Y.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Kiley has always been one of my all-time favorites.
Oh,
there's something about his voice. He's obviously, you know him, friends, as Don Quixote from Man of La Mancha. He was also in Redhead. He was also in Kismet for a while, but he left Kismet famously because he's like, this shit is too high for me. Take my hat. No, thank you.
Favorite song from Redhead. Look who's in love. We are, well, aren't we? Look who's happy and high. No one in our arms, no one but us. Who is tugging at your heart? Who is? You is. You were sublime. We were, well, weren't we? Okay, great. So that's a little bit of Redhead for
that
you.
That was really nice. Albert Haig would be very happy.
Tony Award-winning musical, never been revived.
And everyone's forgotten him. And we'll talk about him at another point.
Sorry.
No, it's all good. Richard Kiley also, he did that great, I think great, Lerner and Lowe, I believe, Little Prince, if you remember that.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Did you say also, Impossible Dream?
What?
Did you say Impossible Dream?
The song that I like I'm singing? No, this is Mariah. I want...
That Richard Kiley sang Impossible Dream.
Well, yes. From Man of La Mancha.
Yeah. Did you already say that?
Yeah, Don Quixote and Man of La Mancha. Catch up, baby, you're behind.
I'm happy I can remember the words to Redhead.
You were too busy trying to figure out your Redhead song. He was also the voice of the narrator in the ride in Jurassic Park for my younger people.
Is he really?
Uh-huh. And he was in No Strings, of course, with Diane Carroll. This is a concert. This clip that I want you to watch, friends, is a concert. It must be from like the 90s, maybe. He's definitely probably 70 or so in this concert. It's him and a male chorus. They call the wind Mariah. Here's what I like about it. It's good old fashioned, great singing and acting, but he doesn't overperform it. He keeps it simple. the in fact, you find more overacting in the male ensemble next to him in their tuxedos. Just enjoy that. You got, you just let your eye stray a little bit to the ensemble and look at how those men are just like, Mariah, they're going for it. But Richard is, he encapsulates everything I love about a strong male singer. Mm-hmm. And it's not overdone. He just stands and sings the song, and it's well done. And I don't know. It makes me feel all the feels. I can never stop watching it. I've watched the clip over and over and over again. And first of all, that's one of my favorite songs of all time. I love Paint Your Wagon. It's one of my all time favorite scores.
The movie? You ever seen the movie?
I have seen the movie. The movie is wackadoo.
Like, let's get no one who can sing in the movie.
No,
to sing this amazing score.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
No, I like the original cast, James Barton. It's a really, I think the score is solid.
Have you listened to the new Encores cast recording?
I have.
That's
on Spotify, actually.
I haven't heard it. I hear it's good. Yeah.
What's great about that is that you get to hear the full orchestrations, but you get to hear more incidental music, more of Trudy Rittman's music.
Your girl.
My lady Trudy. I love you, Trudy. I love you upstairs. Meanwhile, Trudy's like, Kevin, stop, shut up. I don't want the attention. You guys, Trudy Rittman was the one who did all the dance and incidental music. And every time I meet someone from that era, like Ted Chapin or whatever, I'm always like, Trudy, tell me about Trudy.
You get very excited.
No one really cares either, but
another woman that did amazing stuff that nobody gives her credit for.
Exactly, which, hence me always bringing her up. But this, they call them Win Mariah. I love it, and I love Richard Kiley, and I think it's worth a listen, so check it out.
Okay, great. So we have Richard Kiley,
uh-huh.
They call the Win Mariah, and The Alchemy of Theater, a fantastic book. Take a look.
Yeah.
It's in a book. Our own Reading Rainbow. That was cut from Redhead.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Kevin, guess what?
What, Rob?
We now have over 50 iTunes reviews.
Huzzah!
Huzzah! Indeed! Oh. We are climbing those iTunes rating charts.
That's amazing. Yeah. How do we climb even higher?
Can you take me high enough? Little Rock of Ages for you.
Do you know, I like that you took it up so high too. You didn't even, you like went right to the tenor place.
I was going
to
do
no Robert Goulet. Like,
no. Can you take me high enough?
Thanks for coming out tonight.
Ooh, and my falsetto there.
Thank you.
And a little Sergio Frankie.
Yeah, a little Sergio.
It's never over. Much like the 24-hour buffet down in the lobby of the Dunes Casino. Me and Sid the Caesar. Tonight's only at the Mirage. Sorry. Well, lovely listeners, this is where you come in. This is how we're going to climb those iTunes rating charts.
That's right. Lovely listeners, if you love us, would you go to iTunes? Click on the iTunes store. Search for Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
Then click on Ratings and Reviews. Under the Customer Reviews, click Write a Review. Then let us know what you think from 1 to 5 stars.
That's right. And you can leave comments, too, like Kevin Thomas is a god.
Or, Rob, who the hell is Hervé Villachez?
Who is Hervé
Villachez?
I fell for it again.
You fell for it.
That wasn't even the script.
The man has never done one musical in his entire life, and he gets mentioned more than Stephen
Sondheim.
Right,
but I love him from James the Bond. Okay, anyway.
Oh, yes.
Guys, help us out.
Please. Thanks, everyone.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.